I went to the doctor when I was 12, and I remember my doctor asking my mom, like, oh, when are you going to tell him? And my mom was like, oh, soon, soon. And I was just like, what are you guys talking about? Like, tell me what? And they were like, oh, nothing. Like, we're going to make an appointment and we're going to come back and we're going to tell you. And I was just like, well, tell me right now. Like, why are you waiting? A month later, my parents piled all of us into the car. My older sister, my brother, my dad, my mom, we all drove to my pediatrician. And my doctor was just like, you were born without testicles and we're going to have to put you on testosterone for you to go through puberty. And then I was like, oh, that's it? I had a scrotum, and I guess like I never considered something was supposed to be in them. It seemed to me not as big of a deal as they made it out to be. Little did I know all of what would happen after that conversation. Being on testosterone was only the start of it.
This is River Gayo, and today we have their story. It's about being born with a medical condition that took them years to fully understand. From KCRW, you're listening to Bodies. I'm Allison Barringer. And a heads up, this episode contains suicidal ideation, cursing, and a description of medical trauma.
From an early age, I guess I sensed that I was like a bit of an outsider. I remember sometimes my mom letting me paint my nails clear. And this one time specifically, like, my brother was coming into the room and then her telling me, like, put that away, like, your brother's coming. I thought it was weird that she'd make me want to hide it. It's okay to do it in front of you. Like, what does it matter if my brother, my older brother, is seeing it? You know, my parents probably had a sense that it wasn't just about my body, that I would be different. And maybe there was a fear in that of, like, not knowing how I would be different. When I was 13, and I started seeing a specialist in New York, at that point, I was so used to so many people touching my body. It became almost like a routine thing. I remember getting an ultrasound to get the official confirmation if, like, my testicles were there or not. And it was with a technician who then brought 5 or 6 residents to come and observe. And they were just like, with the ultrasound probe and like that cold jelly just scouring over and over. And I just remember just being there for like what felt like an hour, them constantly going through like every inch of my groin and my scrotum and my genitals, just like looking for these like testicles that didn't exist. And at one point I was just like, enough, they're not there, just leave me alone. They stopped and my parents took me back to Jersey, and I just remember just crying the whole time on the car ride back and going over the George Washington Bridge and just looking at New York and being like, why is this my life? Why do people always have to keep touching my body? My parents are from El Salvador. They immigrated in the 80s while the Salvadoran Civil War was happening, and then moved to New Jersey and started a little Salvadoran restaurant, selling pupusas. You know, my parents being undocumented, my mother grew up in like a shack with like dirt floor and, you know, like a tin roof. And so to them, they were like, you know, we're going to do everything that the doctors tell us because, you know, it's a blessing that we even have children born in hospitals. And especially with something that there was literally no answers for and very little research done on, my doctors to them became the only source of information they had about my body and how they could help me. When I was getting examined by doctors, I felt a dissociated dread. I hated it so much, but I thought there was no other option. So it was almost like I would remove my being from myself, and almost all those situations became out of body experiences where I was just kind of in this robotic state where I was just doing what people were telling me to do. My aunt, my mom's sister in Virginia, started going to a Catholic priestess in the mountains of Virginia, who on the 13th of every month had kind of a gathering, and she would wear this like priest gown that was like straight purple always. And I believe she was a nun that then kind of went rogue. We would go into the mountains and pray the rosary, and then we would go back to her home and she would perform these kind of like healings. I guess it was the second or third time that we went to these ceremonies that my mom was like, okay, now it's your turn to go into the circle, because hopefully this priestess would perform some kind of miracle that testicles would eventually suddenly be there. I went in the middle and she started just like praying that would turn into like yelling, and you end up kind of going into somewhat of a trance just by like repetition over and over again of all the Hail Marys. Like I was taken in by something, like something like swooped me. Going to those ceremonies really taught me that I was so much larger than my body, and how miracles are possible, and not in the way that we had imagined to be, not in the sense of I suddenly sprouted out balls, but, you know, in the sense that I had hope for the first time after those ceremonies that, yeah, my body was different. Who knows if this woman could heal me or not, but that I had power, that I had a reason to be here and a reason to be alive, that I wasn't just my body. I think when I was younger, I was like kind of like a hopeless romantic. I remember I fantasized a lot in my mind about wanting a girlfriend, and I was just scared, even though like I hadn't had sex yet, of like hypothesizing of what would happen if someone were to notice that I didn't have testicles. There was an ideal male body, even as a teenager. Like, oh, there were the boys that played football and they were like seen as hot, and knowing that I wasn't like those guys. I was putting on a patch, a testosterone patch, but I was deeply insecure that perhaps it was because I was born without testicles that I wasn't having that body, and like who would be attracted to this body. I just thought that I was just like this anomaly, this like weird organ was missing, and that I needed to work hard to make up for that. 14, 15 is when I started like, you know, really smoking and drinking a lot. It was definitely to cope. There was a song by Lil Wayne called I Feel Like Dying. Like, only when the drugs are gone, then I feel like dying, then I feel like dying. And in my bedroom, it was on the second floor, like out the window, there was like a little landing from like the roof of an extended room in the floor below. And I like climbed out. Like, I definitely, if I jumped, I probably, nothing would have happened. Like, I very well might have just hurt my ankle. But I remember being high and like just being like, wow, like I am so fucking lonely and no one knows anything about what has happened the last few years. And death doesn't seem so bad. I went to see a specialist in New York at Columbia who told me that I needed a prosthetic testes implanted, needed prosthetic testicles implanted in me. I remember my dad being like, we need to have you speak to psychologists to get your prosthetic testicle surgery approved by the insurance. My dad kind of told me that I needed to say, like, how I really wanted them. That was actually never a question asked to me, if I actually wanted them or not. It was just kind of like, this is what has to happen. Think about it, it's actually kind of gross, the fact that like speaking to a mental health professional was only brought up so that a cosmetic surgery that I did not consent to was, it's just kind of warped that those were the priorities, to correct my body and not like psychologically what that would all mean for me. But also, I don't even know if I would have any idea of what I could envision other than what they wanted from me, because I just wanted to do whatever they told me to do. I think I was scared because it was surgery, of course. I was also strangely looking forward to it because I was like, oh, good. Like, this is the final frontier and what's going to, like, completely fix me. The whole idea was, like, to make me into a normal boy and that this was the only thing that was missing. I remember having to, like, pick out my testicle size, which was, at the time, it was super awkward. It was just like, yeah, I guess those are okay. Yeah, anesthesia hits hard and quick. It's there was a nurse that heard, I guess, my parents speaking in Spanish while they were waiting for me to wake up. And so I guess the nurse assumed that I only spoke Spanish. And as I was opening my eyes, she asked me in like a really bad accent. She was like, ¿Tienes dolor? Which means, do you have pain? I was still under the effects of the anesthesia, and I just remember like snapping back at her, and I was like, I speak English, you bitch. And then later on, I apologized. I was like, I'm so sorry. Like, I was like literally on morphine. And she was like, it's okay. Like, it happens. After the surgery, I was in a deep, deep amount of pain. Like, I couldn't really walk. I was just kind of bedridden for like a week or two. But when I came back, I was using crutches, and I told people that I had pulled a muscle in my groin on a treadmill at the gym. And I guess that really became a language of my personhood. What I thought my identity was carved out of was from secrets. And it became this really toxic way of thinking, like, oh, it's my secrets that make me who I am. And the effect of that was, you know, feeling so accustomed to being ashamed of myself. And like, my sophomore year, I had a boyfriend in secret, and it was the first time I was sexually active. And a big fear of mine was like, oh, will someone find out that my body is different when they have sex with me? And I always did keep an excuse in the event that after I had sex, if people would be like, oh, why do your testicles feel this way? I, like, in my mind, I was like, oh, I would just tell them, like, that I had testicular cancer and that they're prosthetic. That was my safety net. But I also thought, like, I was never going to speak about this to anybody in my life. No one's ever going to know about this until I die.
Out there, there's a world outside of Yonkers.
I think the saving grace in my life was probably doing theater and doing musicals, which I started in high school. I think, like a lot of queer people who didn't know they were queer yet, found themselves in theater. You know, it was probably the first time I felt like really, really myself. Listen, Barnaby. My senior year of high school, I was Cornelius in Hello Dolly. He had an amazing song, like, out there, there's a world outside of Yonkers. I just loved that song so much because it really felt like how I was feeling. You know, he's singing about like dreaming about going to New York and like having the time of his life. And at the time I was applying to go to NYU to theater school. And so it just kind of really resonated of me feeling like, okay, like I can finally, you know, make it in the city. And I ended up getting in.
We'll be right back after these messages. And we're back. River is now in college studying theater.
I think for a long time, I wanted my parents to have a more expansive view of gender. As I started going to college and realizing myself that there was a whole wide range and world of what gender could be. The first interaction I had with my dad around gender was like when I was 18 or 19, I think. And this was during my raver phase where I would go to like these raves in Coney Island. And that was the first time I started experimenting, you know, with like makeup and stuff and my gender. And I remember one time I came back home like super late. By super late, I mean like the next day. And he saw that I had eye makeup on and he was like, "What are you, a girl now?" And I just remember being like, "No." And then like just being kind of pissed that like the way he would being called a girl and just kind of like being accused because, you know, I have makeup on that I'm a girl. And for a while, I was so mad at him and resented him for that interaction. And I think that was probably what drove me so mad and so lonely was that I didn't have anybody that I could relate to with this. I didn't see anything about it on TV. Like, I was just like, am I crazy? Is this actually happening to me? If one's reality isn't reflected back to you, then how do you know if it's true or not? The first time I told a few friends in my friend group in college and acting school at like a party, like we were drunk in a bathroom, and I think I just like told them, and you know, they were all queer too, so they were like, "Oh, that's cool," and being like, "Oh wow, it is, maybe it isn't that big of a deal." I remember the first time that I told someone that I like had sex with. I think it was it's like right after having sex, and like we were just like laying. I think he like poked at one of my prosthetic testicles and was like, "Why does this feel like this?" And then I was just like, "Oh, well, it's because it's prosthetic." And then he was like so cool about it. And I guess both those experiences made me realize like people actually don't really give a shit. And the thing that I feared the most and the thing that the doctors and my parents feared the most of like, "Oh, it's going to make sex weird or it's going to change how people saw me." It didn't at all. It wasn't until I went to grad school at USC that I realized the word intersex existed. And I wanted to write a script that incorporates the fact that I was born without testicles. And so I was researching my condition on the internet and I found that it was part of the intersex umbrella. And I was just like, "What's intersex?" And then I like went down this whole rabbit hole of like, you know, the intersex movement, how like they were a group of people that, you know, identified neither male nor female, and how there was over like 40 different variations of how one could be intersex. And I was one of those variations or had one of those variations. My mind was just blown because I just had no idea people were talking about this. I had no idea that people were being vocal about their bodies. I thought this was something that we all should be ashamed about. I started to look at my life and like, wait a minute, all those doctor visits, I wasn't crazy for feeling like shit throughout all of that, because the reality was my rights were being denied and the truth about myself was being denied. And I think that's probably the most painful part of all of it, is just to deny someone the truth about who they are is like maybe one of the worst things that another person can do. And then to almost systematically maintain that lie is just so insidious to me. And then I finally was like, okay, I can do this. Like, I could write about being intersex and put this into my short film for my thesis, which was called Pony Boy.
What's the deal with the name? I know your mama didn't name you Pony Boy.
No, my daddy did. Just kind of conceptualized this story about a intersex sex worker named Pony Boy who fantasizes and has these visions of this like cowboy character who's like the love of his life. And then this cowboy kind of appears to him.
I'm Bruce.
Like Springsteen? And takes him into this like magical kind of like portal, and where he's able to kind of re-examine his childhood being intersex.
The doctor's gonna help you be a man. Don't you want to be a man?
So the film kind of ends on this note of like, you know, you don't really know where Ponyboy's going next, but Bruce, like, he leaves him this like vintage Mustang convertible.
You can have whatever you want. You just have to think you deserve it. What do you want, Pony Boy?
And then Pony Boy kind of like just like gets in the car, and for the first time, like, he has agency in his life and has and is in the driver's seat. Being intersex for me has really freed me from thinking that there's only one right way to be human. For me, being intersex overlaps with being non-binary and trans, because I recognize that my sex is intersex, like biologically, and my gender identity is living and thriving in the in-between. You know, some days it shifts of how masculine I present or want to present or feel comfortable presenting, or how feminine I want to be. If I don't identify as a man or a woman, like, why do I need a replica of these organs? I don't need that. I never needed that. And I don't like that these silicone things are in me. And I hate them. Like, there's no part of me right now that receives any pleasure from them. These testicles are just a representation of the injustice that I experience. It's almost like a constant reminder of that violation. It would be super punk rock to just fucking, yeah, rip them out, sew me back up, and then, yeah, throw them in like some kind of like resin or something. So they're just kind of like, almost look like fossils. Yeah. MoMA, if you're listening, I would be more than happy to be commissioned to get these testicles out of my body and to exhibit them in your space.
Today, River is a working model, actor, and filmmaker. Their film Pony Boy premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival in 2019. And this year, they were selected as a fellow at the inaugural Sundance Trans Possibilities Intensive. You can learn more about their work on their website, rivergayo.com, and Instagram, at rivergayo. That's RIVERGALLO. For a link to The Body's Facebook group, as well as episode transcripts and additional resources about intersex conditions and anorchia, the condition that River has, go to kcrw.com/bodies. You can follow Bodies on Twitter and Instagram at Bodies Podcast. And if you like Bodies, please consider writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find the show. This episode was produced by Hannah Harris-Green and me, Allison Barringer. Story editing by Mira Bertwin-Tonick. Additional story editing and advising by Cassius Adair. Nisha Venkat is with us as KCRW's USC Luminary Fellow and provided production support. Our team also includes associate producer Kalisha Tati and Rebecca Mooney as our managing producer. Original score by Dara Hirsch. Mixing by Tini Lieberson. Special thanks to Kalalia, Sharon Mashihi, Camila Kerwin, and Kristen Lepore. Episode art by Nika King. Cover art by Sarah Bachman. Bodies is supported and distributed by KCRW. Thank you to the whole KCRW team. Thanks for listening. See you in 2 weeks.